boys? Those three boys came to Sugar County. Yes. Cornelius Steele up in what we call Mount Zion, where the church got burned. That's where I first met those three boys. I met them three times after that. One is Frank Kirkland. The old man was named Frank Kirkland. That was the second meet with him. Then the third meet, I met them with another Kirkland named Millard Kirkland. He was a hair cutter, a barber in Philadelphia. Then the fourth meeting I had with him, they came to the school where I was working. March of 64. 64, right. Yeah, that's when it was.
So was Cornelius Steele the man brought them into
Cornelius town? Steele brought them to the school. And I went out and talked with them. I left the classroom and went out and talked with them.
Can you tell us about them? What do you remember about meeting them? What do you remember about them?
Well, we talked about politics, getting involving the black community in everything that was right, to destroy segregation. That's what it's all about. Anybody know that? So it was
when they
a right to be citizen.
When you came out of the classroom, did you talk about something? You were talking about politics.
We,
you were talking.
We talked about our meeting and coming together, and the next coming together, what we're gonna do, things like that. I've forgotten. I couldn't tell you this detail, but you know what it was all about. I do.
You remember when they got killed? You remember when they got killed?
Oh yeah, look, when they got killed, I was at Jackson State. You know, you had to go there every 4 years to renew your teaching license.
All the way to Jackson? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, I was down there to renew my license for teaching. And while I was there, the news came that they were, missing. And I said, oh no, I was just up there yesterday. They had been at the church burning. And while I'd have been at the church burning too, but the reason I didn't go to that church burning, Mama had a first cousin that she thought of much of as a brother. And he was a brother to the family. And he told me not to go. And I said, well, maybe I better obey him. I won't go. So I didn't go to the burning. I came on back to Jackson State Monday morning. And that's when the news came up that those boys were missing. And brother, you've never seen so much fear in your life. Man, that classroom was so full of fear until one boy, I don't know what he had in his hand, but he reached over to hit me after the class broke up going out, because I kind of broke up the class talking about it, the missing boy. They didn't want me to talk about it. It made everybody mad in that class.
Because of their fate.
Yeah, that was June of 21. I was getting ready to go to the first school of theology they had it down on the coast at that time. at school in Georgia, had a little, what you call it?
Seminary.
Yeah, seminary, right. So I went on there. I left that Monday. Well, so, when it was, the school was out.
Down on the coast?
Some, I went to the Gulf.
On the coast?
Yeah. And when I got back to the house, they had found the boy. Mm. I was down there 5 weeks, and they had found the boy.
Did it surprise you that they were killed?
Huh?
Did it surprise you that they were killed?
No. It didn't surprise me. In a sense, it did. That they would go to all that trouble. And destroy 3 lives. I didn't know they'd go to all that trouble. Maybe, I don't know. The white man in this country at that time would do anything.
Yes, sir.
You name it and they'd do it.
Yes,
sir. So I shouldn't have been surprised. So when I was on the coast, they put out a stack of bulletin of threats of the Klan. I'd get up early every morning. Down there for 5 weeks, I'd be up while the rest of them were sleeping. And went out to the Waverly. I went out on the Gulf, and there was all them books piled up like that. They had them on the campus. They put them on the campus, piled up like that. If we can't stop you by putting you in the ground, we'll put you in the water.
That's what...
Yeah, they had that. Why I didn't keep those pamphlets, I don't know. I brought them home, but they got destroyed. Yeah, and made the statement, if the ground don't hold them, the water will. Didn't frighten me. It made me angry. And when I got to the house, after being on that 5 weeks, my neighbor came along and said, you know, they found the boy. That was Wednesday after the first Sunday in August.
Were you frightened?
Was I frightened?
Yeah.
Not a bit. I was angry. I never got frightened one time, only just a moment, like, you know, you pop your finger, I'd get frightened, you know, but it went away just like that. Especially when you're running some danger, looking dangerous or anything. But somehow, I don't know, I'd frightened. But it'd be right over.
When you came back from the coast, Clint,
huh?
Did you go to preaching?
Yeah, I was preaching already.
Oh, you had already been preaching?
Yeah.
Did you have a church?
Yeah, I had a church.
Where was it then?
Up at Stello, North Mississippi. Call it St. Mark. And I had a church in Kemper County.
Kemper County. Where was that?
And I've forgotten the name of it. You don't ask me because I've never forgotten the name. But they put a bomb on it and blew it up.
Where was St. Mark's? Where was St. Mark's? Where?
St. Mark.
Yeah, where was it?
It's up in North Neshoba.
Oh, in North part of Neshoba.
Yeah.
St. Martin?
Yeah. That was a community of Black folk, large community. What is the largest community in Neshoba County? That community.
Then you had one in Kemper County too, eh?
Yeah. And those boys, and that when I went from St. Mark to Kemper County.
Yes.
You know they blew up the Indian church up there, the Mennonite.
Oh, yes,
okay.
Mennonites, yes.
And that wagon that they burned up, the Ku Klux Klan, you know, it lodged up there. It stayed about a week or two before they picked it up. I went by it a couple of times. It's sitting out that side of the road.
What did you think? I've talked to, and we've talked to a lot of the white people in Philadelphia about the time after. What happened? What were your feelings about the white people of Philadelphia who did nothing after this? I mean,
say that again.
What were your feelings about the white people of Philadelphia after this happened?
Well, I knew they were, life was dangerous. I knew that. I knew the feeling was high. I knew that. And everybody was on Ray's side. I knew that. And I had to work from there on what I knew about Neshoba County and the state of Mississippi. And not only that, the United States of America. I knew all of that. And so,
you know, all
that's
the
way I had to work.
Clint, you knew all the time about Killen's role?
Yeah.
Edgar Ray Killen?
Oh, yeah.
You knew all the time?
Look, man, Killen started out in the, sometime I think in the 30s, late 30s. His daddy, might have been his daddy, had a sawmill. And I knew from that he was working in that area and lived in that area. And I knew him from association and news that he was like all the other white, especially in Mississippi. A black man wasn't supposed to be thought much of. And so he was a young boy then, in his 20s. Now, I think that sawmill business started with his daddy, because he's pretty young at that time, in the 30s.
Yeah. Did they question you about his role? The FBI, did they come to you?
I don't
remember. And ask you about Killen?
No, they asked me about the crime, things like that.
Yeah.
They asked me so much that it ain't funny. And about the situation. But did you know the Klan?
Yeah.
I mean the FBI. Them we had in Philadelphia.
Yes.
Was with the Klan.
Yes, sir.
Now you don't like to hear that. I'm telling you the truth.
Yes, sir.
You know, it took, after talking about finding those bodies, it took them 40-some days to find, to say what happened. Dr. King got on the air in October, I believe it was, October of 64, and says, I don't know what happened. I have three notes information as what took place about those boys. Jed who jumped on there and called him a what?
A liar.
A notorious liar. That's just the way he announced it. So, in my association with the with the FBI all together in Philadelphia. They was on the Klan side. They wasn't on ours.
No love.
No, no. Now, a lot of people don't want to hear that. A lot of them don't want to hear that. But it's a fact.
Tell me about Lawrence Rainey.
Huh?
Tell me about Lawrence Rainey.
Lawrence Rainey was one of the most vicious, ignorant, excuse the expression.
It's all right.
Man ever lived. He kept a big chew tobacco in his mouth, and he showed out. He killed about three boys, black. One of them was handcuffed. And when the civil rights moved in Philadelphia, we had some brave boys. Richard Tindley from Ohio, Feather Stone from Washington, and Harry Valentine from Philadelphia. Brother made him shame. When he come around there, messing around in that community, they talk to him like he's somebody else. And they finally got him down to nothing. But that was one of the notorious evil officers you ever seen. Well, when you saw killing on the air, you could see Rainey. In fact, you could see a lot of white preachers.
Oh, Lord.
And a lot of, and a few black. That's the truth. Ignorance has torn this country apart. Traditional ignorance has torn this country apart. Couldn't you see it when that man was being arrested and bringing him in there in a handcuff?
Yes, sir.
That was plain as daylight. That's Rainey. That's Rainey killed all the boys and nothing done about it.
Tell me what you think about the prosecution now.
Well, I can't say. Anyway, he was a reflection of the past and much of the present. And man, can you see, maybe you didn't see it like I saw it. Boy, I saw a boogeyman. And as far as I'm concerned, it was America. Traditional America. Racial America. Capitalistic, imperialistic America.
All right, go on. That's all right. Yes, tell it.
So does it make sense to prosecute him?
Did it make sense to prosecute him? Yes, it makes sense to me. What makes so much sense to me, you can see the reflection of the past. And I said some of the prayers. The lack of education. The lack of destruction of racism, imperialism, and capitalism. Boy, I was another surprise. Helped in my life to see this thing go down the drain, yes. Some of it.
Yes.
Now, William Winters has got a program out to educate people. Public school, pulpit. The pulpit is one of the sorriest places in this world.
Tell it.
If you want to know the truth, one of the sorriest places in this world. Now, you don't want to hear that. You might not want to hear it. But I'm telling you. You asked me for it, and I'm going to tell you.
Tell it, man. Tell it. Needs telling.
Exploitation was so heavy in this country, it kept us so poor until we felt like that we didn't have power enough to demand nothing.
So when civil rights workers then came here in the 1960s,
okay,
what did you think?
What did I think?
Yeah, did you join them right away?
I was already joined. I told you.
Yeah, I know, but with these workers.
Yeah. And we had a problem because of that pressure coming from Reconstruction Day after Reconstruction being taken away our rights. And not only taking away the rights, exploitation was heavy on us. Now, you might not believe it. We lived out there on that farm, you know, like everybody else. And so paperwood, called pulpwood, timberwood, milk, creamery. Believe it or not, this whole Neshoba County, those big companies. I went into the pet mill and found out that they had every black man that was selling milk or cream at that time was taking it. Now, you say, how do you know? I'm telling you, I went in there and had it tested. So they was taking mama and papa's produce that they were feeding the country like everybody else. They were taking it. Like the test, creamery test. You know how you test cream. You know how you test milk. I come to find out my parents, after 50 years there with me, they would be cutting half in two. Well, they cut every black person like that, half in two. And when they went to the timber business, they're selling timber, same thing. Cotton, the same thing. And the government jumped into testing. You remember? In 30-something. They jumped in it to stop, exploitation.
Your folks hauled pulpwood too, Clint?
Huh?
Pulpwood hauling.
Yeah.
Your folks?
Yeah.
Were in that?
You did what?
They did that?
Yeah.
Hauled pulpwood. Cut and hauled pulpwood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was everybody on their own property.
Yeah, this is
the area. That was a continuous thing every day. Cotton, selling cotton.
Yeah.
Selling pulpwood,
yeah.
Timber, and milk.
Yeah. You remember when the paper companies came?
Big pardon?
International paper, you remember when they started?
Oh, yeah.
When they came into this area?
Right.
Yeah? When was that, Glenn?
When was that?
Wait, were you a little boy then, or what?
No, that was in the 30s.
In the 30s, yeah. Okay.
All right. I got in my 20s. We up in between Roosevelt. That was in Roosevelt's time.
Yeah, New Deal.
So So when you were growing up in Neshoba County, when did you first leave Neshoba County? When did you first
go? I left Neshoba County in 40. I had taught 3 years in a little local school, paid $29 a month, and I taught 4 months. That was the limit of black education. That was the limit. 4 months. 15 to $30 for a teacher. That was in the 30s.
One room schoolhouse.
Yep, one room, two. Well, I stayed in a two room. I say it was two.
Two.
Yeah. One room.
How far up did your own studies go? Did you just go to high school?
I went to high school. Meridian.
Meridian.
And Jackson.
And Jackson.
You know, they had high school. Linnell was there then. And Tougaloo had a prep school.
For teachers.
And I went to the prep school at Tougaloo. And from that to Meridian at a normal school, which lasted 5 weeks in the summer.
5 weeks in the summer.
So you say you went away from Neshoba County first in
1940. I left Neshoba County in 40.
Where'd you go?
I went to Washington, D.C. And I started working for the ammunition builder. The war was breaking out. I went to work there as a messenger. Whatever messenger.
Yes, sir. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yes,
so,
sir.
I met Somerville, who introduced the wrote up to Social Security. He and his son. It was Somerville. I think it was Somerville. Yeah, I met him. Right down in the ammunition building in Jackson, in Washington. Yeah.
So then did you go into the service?
Huh?
Did you go into the military?
Yeah, I went into service in 42.
42?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that, about the service, where you went?
I'll tell you what about the service. Now, I had a strong resentment of the service.
Yes, sir.
Because I know what was going on. But I went on to, you know, the draft. And they was going to give me, I went to Milwaukee. What'd they call that school up at Lake?
Great Lake.
Great Lake.
Great Lake. Yeah, I went to Great Lake. And stayed about 6 or 7 weeks and went to California. I stayed out there about a year and a half or two. And I got kicked out because I was very contrary.
Contrary.
And my contrariness, knowing that, and you know that's where that ship blew up.
In Oakland.
You remember the history?
Yeah, right.
I was there, that was 20 miles away at Shoemaker. Mm-hmm. And I was at Mayor Island.
Yeah.
And the shoemaker was 20 miles up there. I leaned in the bed that night, 9 o'clock, at power blew me out of the bed, just like that. Just picked me up and pitched me on the floor. Mm. Yeah. There was 700 lives lost in that.
Right.
Approximately.
What happened that made them kick you out? Finally.
Well, I was trying to say contrary.
I know you were contrary, but what was any one thing that
I do contrary? Yeah,
what'd you do finally that said enough? That made them say enough?
Yeah, could not do contrary thing, and they didn't want that there.
Yeah, what?
You're too nutty. Yeah. You know, they didn't need that. Army can't handle that.
So was there one big episode that made them throw you out? Did you do something, or they thought you did something?
Did I do something?
Yeah, contrary. What happened? Was there a story of why they threw you out, or just general contrary?
Bad contrary.
They gave me honorable discharge.
They gave you honorable discharge?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you. Okay.
They were nice enough to do that.
Isn't that nice?
And nice enough to pay for my education. Yeah. I went to school after I got out.
How about that?
Yeah.
On the GI Bill?
On the GI, right.
Where'd you go?
Jackson State.
Clint, were you in the Army or the Navy? Because you went to Great
Navy.
Lake.
Navy.
You were in the Navy?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was discharged from Navy.
So you then studied, what'd you study at Jackson State?
Mathematics and science. I already had my history.
Well, you sure did.
That's a good line.
Now, you like might something laugh at, but I ain't lying.
We ain't lying.
It's something you don't even want to know. You're white.
No, I think I want to know. Yeah. I do want to know.
Huh?
I want to know.
You want to know. Well, you could see that reflection in that rest the other day. You know, read.
All right. Okay. What year did you finish Jackson State? You came out what year?
Yeah.
You remember?
I can't hardly remember. Okay. But I think it was 52.
52?
Yeah.
And then what'd you do?
You call there, you can find out.
1952. Yeah. Left in 1952.
Yeah.
Okay. And where'd you go? Back to the Shoal County?
Teaching. Yeah, I still stayed in the Shoal County.
In the
teaching business.
Oh, teaching.
Wasn't anything else for me to do.
Yeah.
And farming. I stayed in the teaching and farming. Okay. I had a few cattle. I don't know.
Now, your brothers? How many brothers did you have, Clint?
Brothers?
Yeah.
I had four brothers.
You had four brothers?
I had four brothers. One of them died.
One of them died?
Back in March.
Did they stay in Mississippi or leave?
The rest of them leave. Three of them.
They left? Or they stay here?
Two of them in Chicago.
Two in Chicago.
Oh, there's three in Chicago.
Three brothers.
That's all of them.
All
right. All three of them in Chicago.
In Chicago.
Your brother who died, what happened to him?
Well, we buried him at home, but he was alcoholic. I think he was 70.
How were the other black people?
73 or 4 years old. I've forgotten. I don't know how old he was.
Were they younger than you, Clint?
Huh?
Your brothers younger than you?
All of them younger than me.
All of them younger.
Everybody in the house younger than me.
Okay.
My oldest brother died at, as I told you, 17.
Yeah.
With pneumonia.
How were the other black people in the county living? Like the...
Say what?
How were the other black people in the county living? Like the people you were teaching? What was life like for black people?
Oh, yeah, there's some boys out teaching and living all over in the Shelby County.
What was life like for them? Was it hard?
Life, living, for them. Well, it was under a segregation system.
They were farming, Clint?
Yeah, they was farming.
And cutting pulpwood.
Yeah, everything was farming back in those days.
And cutting pulpwood.
Yeah.
They all
in pulpwood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything farming the street that wasn't in the city. And most people was back on the farm.
Their own farm or somebody else's farm?
Yeah, owned it.
Their own.
And a lot of them were sharecroppers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. When this machinery began to come in here, that's when they left, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So
recognized farm.
Yeah. With everything I taught was... country boys.
Clint.
So I'm teaching.
Is Constance Slaughter a relative of yours?
No, she's not a relative.
Okay.
They had the same name.
Same name?
Yeah.
No relation?
Yeah, my mother's side.
All right.
Yeah, she
got
was
you.
Slaughter.
So So you came back after Jackson State, were teaching in Neshoba County. When did you start to get involved in politics?
Politics? I was involved in politics in the 60s, because you remember, there was about four of us, Ralph Hayes.
Ralph is from Neshoba, and, from Holmes County?
Mark Gilliard.
Yeah, okay, Ralph Hayes.
And myself, might have been somebody else, took it on ourselves and ran for the congressional seat in 60. When was that? In 65? 66.
66.
66. Yeah. It's on the record.
You were FDP candidates, right? FDP?
Yeah, right.
FDP candidate.
Yeah. Freedom Democratic Party. And that's where we got started. That was the beginning.
Clint.
Of our little right for vote.
Clint. Did you go to Atlantic City in 64?
No, I didn't go.
Okay. You weren't an FDP delegate in 64.
I went in 68, I believe it was.
Well, you went to Chicago in 68.
Yeah, 68.
Okay, that's cool.
When did you get started with the FDP?
FDP?
When did
it
you begin?
Must have been 65 or 66.
How'd you get started with them?
Well, there's a bunch of, we couldn't get in the Democratic Party in Mississippi. They wouldn't recognize. And not being recognized, we formed what you call Freedom Democratic Party. I've forgotten a whole lot, man. As I say, I've had trouble with this allergy and stuff. And I can't hear anything like that. But I've forgotten a whole lot. But it was just, that's the way we got started. Through the Freedom Democratic Party. And we ran on that ticket. I got a few votes. My mother, that was the first time my mother voted before she died. First time she voted before she died. She got to vote for me.
She got to vote for you?
Yeah.
Loyal down.
She died in 66, August of 66, and the vote was run off.
August of 1966?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you participate in the Meredith March, Clint?
Did what?
The Meredith March.
Yeah, what about
it? Did you participate? 1966?
Did I put it in the paper?
Were you in it, the march?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I looked, man. When we met in Memphis.
Yes.
On that, for that.
Yeah, tell us
occasion.
About it. Yes.
Okay, we came out to Hernando.
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 Yes, sir.
To complete James Madison's failure because of getting shot.
Yes, sir.
And we were on that road 7 days.
Yes, sir.
To Jackson, I think it was.
In 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Can
and Dr. King came to Philadelphia.
Yes.
Twice.
Right.
While he was there. He came one time. We was intending to go to the courthouse,
right,
so he could speak.
Yes.
And they stopped us at the jailhouse. And so he came back.
Yes.
And on the second trip, and right, we did get to the courthouse.
We left Canton and went over to Neshoba County.
Yeah.
Right? And then we walked up to the courthouse.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Yes.
That was in 66.
That was
66.
June 66.
Can I ask you before this, when in the, you said you became involved with civil rights movement with Rosa Parks, did you join NAACP then?
Oh, I had a membership in NAACP way back in the 40s, and I dropped it. And I think I went again and dropped it, maybe something. But anyway, I dropped it. And when we got loud with the civil rights movement, you know, we had a little problem with the NAACP. They were a little too conservative for us.
Have mercy. Lord have mercy.
So that made me drop away.
Yes, sir.
Corps chose me.
Corps chose me.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I stayed in Corps a couple of years.
Talk
to me about getting into Corps.
Yeah, we want to, you know, Dave here, he was running Corps in Mississippi.
Right.
So how did you...
I saw my cousin taken up by the mob.
When did that happen? What happened?
I was about 25.
What happened?
They claim he touched a white woman, white gal, between Laurel Hill and Edinburgh. And they... My uncle got turned over before they got him. Carried him to jail. And they carried him right on to Parchment. You know, the state prison. They lynched him while he was there.
In Parchment?
Yeah, they lynched him a black prisoner there, as far as they're concerned. He had to get out there and do a certain amount of work. There's this woman there, or they beat him there. So that was lynching there.
Yeah.
Every day. And they put him to some task, and he couldn't complete it. So they killed him. They killed him right there in Parchment. And there's a lot of people was taken that way. And, you know, the communication was in the hands of the white, not the black.
What was his name? What was his name?
Otis Lewis.
Do you remember any lynchings in your time in Neshoba County? Do you remember any lynchings in your time in Neshoba County?
Well, that was what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm telling you about the story that Mama told me. And let's see. There was some lynching in there. I can't think now. There was a lynching in Neshoba County. That was a county in Mississippi. There haven't been a lynching either.
I don't know. Do you have more questions?
Yes, that? I just wanted to ask you about, you know Dick Malpas?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Huh? Good man.
Huh?
Good man?
Good man?
Yes.
I hope he is.
I hope so. What's your impression?
I believe so.
You believe so? Okay.
Just like William Winter.
All right.
I can see strong men in their lifestyle.
Okay. Did you know his folks?
Huh?
Did you know his folks?
Oh yeah, look, man.
You knew his folks?
We sold timber. Yeah, my daddy sold timber to him.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Tell us, man.
Look, Papa bought mules for me. The farm, you know, back in those days you had to buy a mule once in a while.
Yes.
And so Papa bought a couple of mules there. And farming. Uh-huh. Sure.
Papa bought mules.
Yeah. And so I learned those muffles from that part of business. Papa worked at the sawmill there in the summertime for them. And the granddaddy, his granddaddy, seemed to be that type of man too. He seemed to be a pretty good man. But he was in the white world.
Yes, sir.
And he was white, too. So exploitation. You couldn't miss it. Go down scale log to scale him, mate. If it's black, he come in there, you write down something else he may not write down. Well, that's all he bought, timber. Yes. And he sold mew. Yes. Had what you call Liberty State. Yes. It was spring. Somebody was looking for a new mew to farm. Yes. The old man, Dick Mumpus, we called him.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And let me tell you a little incident. When I was teaching up in Neshoba County, I told you about that little school I went to up at three teacher type and got put out in 60, I mean in 57 and 8, 9. His daughter came up there, supporting some magazine, I don't know what, forgot what this magazine was. And the first time I met that woman, he had about three daughters. And she came up there. And that had been 40 years ago, I guess, when my daddy worked at the mill. And, so she presented herself. I don't think I took the magazine, but anyway, later on, when we had the demonstration in Philadelphia for black to register and vote in 64, September 64, it was 17 of us in line protesting the county to let us vote. And it was 17 out there. I went out there and I come from school. I was teaching then in September. And I was hurrying. And I carried the children down the road and put them, locked them up in the car, told them to stay there till I get back. I went up there and got in that line. We just rested them, you know. Before I got to the line, I saw somebody hit with a camera. Somebody came out of the store and hit him and knocked him out. He went this way and they grabbed his camera. Somebody took his camera. And Margaret, I'm talking about her, his daughter, she came in that line with us, questioned us, "What you here to vote for?" I said, "Look here, here comes that woman. She's from," I said, "that's Marple's wife. She was up at the school in 57. And here she is out here now, 7, 8 years after." I said, "Wonder what she's doing." But she was asking everybody, "Why you want to vote? Why are you in the line?" And she got to me. She said, "Why are you in the line?" I, "For the same reason that you want to vote." She said, "Oh, that's all right." She went on about her business. Now that was Marple's daughter, the old man Dick Marple's daughter. And I've been knowing those Marple's there all my life.
Were you, anyone tried to go to the courthouse to register? Were you trying to register?
Yeah, there had been somebody at the courthouse asking for registration, but they didn't, you know, the guy there was sane, the Kirk Craig. So he turned them away. He asked them a few questions, and they didn't answer them, couldn't answer them. And he just said, "Oh, you can't register." So he did. He kept throwing them out that way. But let me tell you an incident. When we started registering, showing up after that incident And the federal had got that in, you know. And most of them was registered by the federal. I went in the courthouse to take a few of them myself. Well, in fact, I stayed busy every day taking them to the courthouse, old and young. So I cared fate more. I'm up at Huatá, the man I told you. And he's a man, veteran of World War I. And Fate Morris got there. Old Sane Sane, who was the clerk, he said, write your name down here. Because they were resting here, no problem. Fate couldn't write, you know, at that time. So Fate said, I can't write. Said, you're going to have to put it down there. You're going to have to write the name yourself. He said, and when he said that, I said, look like you're going to have to write it. That's what I told him. He said, and he put it down. And looking on that book, that man registered in 22. He's on that book, 22, after World War I. That was his name. He and some more black veterans.
After the war.
And I told him, I said, look here. Yeah, I said, Fate been here before.
Fate been here before.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was 22, and this was 66, I believe.
1966.
Were there a lot of black veterans in Neshoba County? A lot of black? Were there many?
Yeah,
black
there was a lot of, a good many black World War I veterans.
World War I veterans.
Yes. Yeah, it was a good many of them.
About World War II?
What about World War II?
World War II?
Yeah, what about?
Oh, yeah, World War II, there was loads of them.
Yeah. Did they try to register?
Yeah.
My brother was one of them. He went out there, he stayed 5 years.
Did they try to register, Ken? The World War II vets?
Yeah.
The black World War II veterans, did they try to register?
Well, no, there wasn't no such thing as in at that time.
No.
Because it was sealed up.
It was sealed up.
Most black people thought you had no right to register.
No.
even the veterans, even the ones that have been, say, fighting in Europe.
Well, when they came back here, I don't know, they didn't make much to do about it.
They did.
But we asked for it in the service. We demanded it while we was in the service. Uh-huh. You know, we did vote. Roosevelt let us vote.
While you were in the service?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Don't you heard of that, haven't you?
No, I never did.
No,
yeah,
this is news to me.
He asked for it. Uh-huh. He said, all veterans could vote.
But when did you register? Did you register here in the church?
I registered here in 65.
65?
64.
When in 64? Before the murders or after?
That was after the murder.
Were you the first?
No, I'm just telling you now, it was 17 of us.
Oh, I see.
And
so that line.
Protest. We had a great big to-do there at that time. The Civil Rights Boys is coming in here, and Gurr, and they had put 60 auxiliary police on, and it was 17 of us. I was telling you this story a while ago about this Marcus murder. 17 of us in that line.
17 in line.
And the superintendent that I was teaching under. His name was T.C. Ward. He came out there and got in the line.
You had federal registrars?
Yeah.
Not at that time.
No? He was came shortly after.
Shortly after?
Yeah.
So did
that was September 18th. 18th of September.
That's T.C. Ward.
64.
So were all 17 of you able to register? Did they register you? Or?
I registered myself. In about 65, I think.
So none of those people got to register that day?
Not one. No, man. They had 60 auxiliary police out there, clubbing niggas. They called
excuse me. Lord. Yes, Lord.
And this, I'll tell you about that boy, they hit with the camera,
yeah,
and stripped the camera off of him, yeah, off of him, and but we still laid in there. As I said, the 17 of us was out there protesting for registration. And that was September of 64.
Yes.
And so O.T.C. Ward was the superintendent while I was teaching. He came out there and protested us being in the line.
Yes.
And he couldn't, good, he didn't say nothing to me, but he saw me there.
Yeah.
And so he asked one guy who was hauling paper wood for him. He said his name was Horn, Lan Horn. He said, "Lan, I'll give you a pup wood business, and now you in this line. What you got against us?"
Ungrateful wretch.
Yeah. And a guy down the street, I owed him a few dollars on an old tie, $19. He came running up. "Clint, I want my money."
Yeah.
Hell yeah, it is. I had the $18, $19. I handed it to him.
Yeah.
Tie man.
Glenn.
We 17 of us in that line. We were being threatened, but we stayed there.
You got a message for young people today?
Yeah.
What would you tell them, Glenn?
What would I say?
Yes, sir.
Well, I preached it. I was in the pulpit at that time. And I've been doing it ever since then. I've been preaching it.
Yes.
Get ready.
Get ready.
Freedom is here.
Yes.
Dr. King said, "I've seen the coming of the Lord." Yeah, I preached it all the time. I pastored about 35 years, and I preached human rights, civil right, God's right, any right you can name. And I'm doing it today when I can catch, you know, yes, young people.
Yes,
but I'm getting where I came here, and I'm just, you know, at them. And but I'm telling my people all time, day and night, that I can meet with, come by, get ready. The time is already here. Why are you standing back? But as I told you a while ago, our big problem is the minister. The ministerial business is our biggest problem of keeping people from going to the front and demanding their rightful place. He holding it. You're holding it back. We had a meeting down at Anderson Chapel, I think it was in 90. And I happened to be there. It's a racial meeting on racism. And there were people getting up, giving their opinion,
yes,
on racism. So a little slow about it when the bishop took his seat and asked, "Oh, what should we do?" And I told him, I got up My wife was behind me. She's one of the head person too. So she's kicking me all in the back. Hush your mouth. And I said, but I got up anyway. And I told him, I said, well, the Bible says in John 8 in the 32nd verse, thou shalt know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. I said, now these politicians have told a lot of lies about what truth is, and they've kept us from it. But what else can we do but preach it when we get in the pulpit? Tell the truth. And the bishop, I think that turned the bishop. The bishop didn't know what hardly to say. I think he felt like, and he asked me something about it, I forgot now. What do you mean, or what or something? But anyway, I went on to tell him that we are here to be free. And that was the place. And the preacher in the pulpit had always preached the truth. And I said, and then you won't have to, we won't have to be meeting here. We are short of the truth. So that bishop looked kind of funny. Okay. Bishop Carter.
Oh, yeah. United Methodist Bishop.
Huh?
United Methodist Bishop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yes, sir, that's true. That's right.
And I noticed, let me tell you what, at that meeting, they were just as quiet as a mouse, like preachers.
Oh, Lord.
Few white, wasn't many white there, was mostly black. People are scared of the fact. You know why? Because they've told the lies so long. And it's been adhered until people are fearful for the truth to get on the tip of their tongue.
Yes.
Some truth I can't say. But it ought to be told.
Amen.
Amen. The time is already here. Oh, yes, Lord.
I think we've taken up.
We've taken your whole day.
We wore you out, Clint.
No, he wore us out.
It's still a bit. Oh, Clint.
Yes. Thank you for all this time.
Oh,
that's
the red button.
Oh, one second.